good day to be indigenous.
Get up, stand up.
They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we discuss local and national Native news and events. And as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Little Moments Count. Little Moments Count is a statewide collaborative focused on helping parents and caregivers learn about the importance of brain development in the first 3 years of life. For more information, you can visit littlemomentscount.org.
Thank you, Ogama. Hey, we are having an exciting show today, and we're going to have Brooke LaFleau on. And I'm telling you, this young person does a lot in the community. I see her everywhere, and I'm really, really pleased to have her on. Finally, I know she just had a basketball tournament, a Native basketball tournament here and this past weekend, and that's just one of the many things that she does, but we're going to have her on next. But first, here we're going to listen to the news that you don't hear anywhere else. We're going to go with Ogama with the news, and you know, we do this news that you don't hear anywhere else. Welcome, Ogama.
Hey, Buju Ani, everybody. This is Ogama Ganu Akwe coming at you with some news and information. From Native Roots Radio Presents, I'm Awake. Today is midweek, and we are just coming down from Indigenous Peoples Day and all the things that follow along with that, all the amazing projects and events and activism that has come out of that. It's been so beautiful to see. Just wanted to put a call out there for our relatives who are on the waiting list for federal recognition. Many tribes do not have the same rights as others because they are not federally recognized. So they do not have access to trust land status, access to federal emergency assistance, or to any sort of legal power for civil lawsuits against corporate polluters. There are hundreds of tribes who are waiting on the list for federal recognition in the United States. So I just want to put up some prayers for our relatives who are in that long, arduous process, and may they be recognized soon. But a little bit of negative news coming out of California that there was some city officials in Los Angeles who were caught on recording making anti-Indigenous comments. Two or three people on the Los Angeles City Council ended up resigning. Mitch O'Farrell, who is a citizen of the Wandayo Nation, said that the council members were Neri Martinez, Gil Sedilio, and Kevin DeLeon, and they resigned because of these comments. Some of the comments included talking about seeing a lot of little short dark people, saying of the Indigenous residents in a certain part of Los Angeles, and making reference to those people being from Oaxaca. And they even spoke negatively of Kevin DeLeon, who was another council member who also resigned. But that person, Kevin DeLeon, also spoke negatively about African-American children, an African-American child of another council member at the same time. So, like, this is pretty intense that this is happening with the LA city officials, and this was caught on recording. And when people talk about Indigenous Peoples Day, you know, this is why we need to talk about that. There's over 100 tribes in California alone, and California has the highest number of Native Americans and Alaska Natives than any state, according to the most recent census, and they account for just under 1% of the population of Los Angeles, which is a city of more than 3.9 million people. So there is a lot of Native people in California, and you would think California would be, you know, for the most part, fairly liberal, but these things are still happening. They're happening every day. And I just wanted to raise that up as we come out of Indigenous Peoples Day, that every day is Indigenous Peoples Day. And, you know, check your privilege, check your language, and make sure that you are being respectful to Native people in all areas, especially when you hold a public office. That's really, really important. Some other news that I wanted to hit as we come into election season is that the Oregon legislature is having another Native woman run for the Oregon House of Representatives for 2022. Anessa Hartman, who's Haudenosaunee, is hoping to join the Oregon House alongside Tana Sanchez, who's Shoshone, Bannock, Ute, and Carrizo. And they are... it looks like they are in contact and working together, and this is just really exciting that there are more people, more Native people willing to step up to that plate and to run for office all over the country. As a reminder, here in Minnesota, we have got a lot of Native people who are running for office. I believe we have seven that are running unopposed, and 9 to 12 total for varying levels of offices here in Minnesota. So make sure to research your candidates as we come in closer to the election. We've got about 21 days before the general election nationwide. And that is definitely going to be something that could benefit Native people to have more representation. And I don't want to say could benefit. It's definitely something that's going to benefit Native people to have more representation in the U.S. government, in our local governments, in our state governments. At any level of government, representation for Native people is going to be helpful. That is definitely for sure. There is a new historical site on the border of Wisconsin and Michigan, thanks to the Menominee tribe. The Menominee tribe just got approval from, I believe it's the state of Michigan. And what happened is they are having the Historic Preservation Review Board approve a site named Anem. Anem Omot, and it's a cultural landscape area that includes burial mounds, garden beds, and dance rings, and it's on the Menominee River on the border of Wisconsin and Michigan. Anem Omot means the dog's belly, and it's located about 50 miles upstream from the mouth of the Menominee River and where it meets the Bay of Green Bay. And the original, And the site contains ancient raised agricultural fields, hammered metal artifacts from the copper period, and several dance rings, as well as burial mounds. The tribe is very happy that they were able to get this approved, and they have unanimously approved the site's nomination in the Wisconsin Review Board, and the Michigan Review Board vote is going to complete this. The other bonus to this is that the site is also where they're proposing something called the Back 40 Mine. And the Back 40 Mine is slated for, you know, starting to request permits. And this would prevent the Back 40 Mine from, well, not prevent, but it would make the permitting process for the Back 40 Mine harder, which is a win for our, you know, our environment, which is good news too. There's still a lot of people who are recovering from the storm in Alaska. So our prayers are coming up for those relatives who are dealing with the major storm. It was a 1,000-mile stretch along the state's western coastline that hit a couple of weeks ago. So the governor of Alaska is now seeking federal disaster funds, and tribes are, you know, working to build their communities back out. If you're looking to give donations to help out people in Alaska, you can go to the Western Alaska Disaster Recovery Fund, the American Red Cross, the Alaska Salvation Army Emergency Disaster Services, and individuals who may be listening from Alaska can apply for grants through the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Back to you, Robert.
Hey, thank you, Ogama, as always, for the news. We're really excited. Up next here on the Civic Media Network all over Turtle Island, we're going to have Brooke LaFleau, Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, Indigenous educator and entrepreneur. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
The Native American Community Development Institute's Make Voting a Tradition is a culturally specific, year-round, multi-generational approach to increase voter turnout and civic engagement. The fundamental principle of MVAT is that Native Americans are more likely to become politically active when engaged by peers and family. MVAT has created partnerships with local, statewide, and national efforts to increase turnout in BIPOC and other traditionally low turnout groups. Go to NACDI.org, NACDI.org, to learn more.
This is Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to you by Little Moments Count. Native Roots Radio's in partnership with Little Moments Count to inform people that nearly 80% of brain growth happens in the first 1,000 days of life, and really small moments of interaction like talking, playing, reading, and singing help to create those pathways and build children's brain development during this early stage of life. You can visit littlemomentscount.org for more information, and we have a wonderful guest on as part of that partnership tonight, Robert.
We certainly do. Brooke LaFleau, Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa, Indigenous educator and entrepreneur. Brooke, I want to read your bio here because this is super impressive, and I've wanted you on the show for many years, and I'm so glad that you're on. But Brooke, you grew up in the Twin Cities and is an educator and entrepreneur and facilitates the growth of local Indigenous economies. Brooke was born into the Eagle Clan and descends from the Bear Clan. Her academic background includes Tulane University Bachelor's of Science of Neuroscience and Anthropology and La Jolla University of Maryland's Master's in Education and two Associate Montessori AMI diplomas and assistance in infancy, birth 3 years, primary 3 to 6 years. Brooke has 5 years of experience in educational material making and many years of beadwork sewing. I'm out of breath, Brooke. I'm so happy you're here. Welcome.
Bonjour. Mi gwech for having me on today, Mr. Pilot.
Oh, you don't have to call me Mr. Well, you can call me Mr. Pilot. No, I'm just kidding. I appreciate you, and, you know, and what you do for the community. I just, before we talk a little bit about what we're going to talk about, I just want to give you a big shout out of your basketball tournament that you had this weekend. That's awesome. That's all I have to say.
Miigwech, you know, our boys basketball team really took that plan and we executed it together. So we were happy to share that space with a lot of their peers at their high school and on our East Side community here. So this is where we all live and play and work. So it was an honor to do that at Harding.
Right on, the old school I taught at. And I was able to shake hands with quite a few of your students that were on your team and give them some encouragement because they're doing good things and doing it the right way. And that's because of leadership like you're giving to our community, Brooke. So thank you so much.
Miigwech. I'm trying. I've got, you know, my little brothers on the team, as you know. I think I met you as a teacher, so that's why I still see you as a teacher. Dakota's a 16-year-old boy now, so I have a lot of teenagers under my wing just because Creator gave me a little brother. So.
Oh, and they're very respectful, a young men, and I really appreciate that, being an educator. I know it has to do with upbringing and coaching, and that's a huge thing that you are doing in the community. I want to jump in right away now after that because, again, I'm really impressed with you. I watch what you're doing. You're working with artists. You're doing all these things in the community. I see you all over. But let's talk about the Montessori teaching methods and why are they similar to traditional indigenous ways of teaching, or are they?
Yeah, so I got to study the Montessori method from birth through six. And prior to that, I was a neuroscience major. So just some context there. The brain science and the neuroscience has been really validating the Montessori method. The method itself is about 100 years old. It came from a woman named Maria Montessori, of European descent, but she was a woman when women weren't doctors. She traveled the world before, you know, airfare was affordable for most people. She's worked with children all around the world. She worked with the Untouchables in India. She's been in the Americas and Africa when she developed this method. So I say that, and in some ways, when I was reading her methodology, I was like, she must have had a native person in her corner telling her things because in one way, she talks about children having a spiritual embryo and having a spiritual being a spiritual being. And that was one of the first things I've learned as an indigenous person, right, is that our children come right from the spirit world. We don't pick our children. Those spirits pick us. So just to think of a educational pedagogy of thinking of beyond just the mind and the physical realm that we live in, right? But thinking that children have spiritual beings that also need to be nourished was one of the first things that I've noticed about the Montessori method and how it was a little bit more compatible with indigenous ways of being as opposed to this the current approach we've had, which hasn't changed in 100 years either, which is based on the factory workers, right? The factory worker model. And so Montessori is very different. It's more individualistic. It's meeting the gifts of that exact child. It's following the child. The child has so much potential in their brain already. And there's just a lot of ways that I have been able to study the method and then use it as a tool, not as the end all be all solution for indigenous education, but use the method as a tool to deliver a more culturally appropriate education because it's a lot more compatible with our ways than, you know, the contemporary education of sitting in a chair for 8 hours and being talked at.
Well, and I was lucky too, because what I was teaching was a pretty hands-on class and, all the things that people told me that I was lazy about when I had kids teaching kids, there's terms for it. Now it's relearning by teaching, and those things that I know that you've dug in deep. And, in Montessori schools, does everybody there have to speak the language all the time, or is it kind of certain parts?
So Montessori is a big advocate of dual language, bilingual language learners. So again, this is where it's compatible with Indigenous ways of revitalizing our languages. And the brain, again, the brain science supports all of that, right? Like the more languages you know, the more brain activity you're going to have. So Montessori is a tool that you can deliver a full immersion classroom, right? So you would typically have one teacher that speaks one language and then another teacher that only speaks the alternative language that you're trying to teach, whether that be Lakota, Ojibwe, Spanish, right? There's even in the Twin Cities, we had even a Hmong immersion Montessori here. So you typically have the two reference points of two different languages in a full immersion classroom, and those kids are getting both languages at the same time, and they're not really expected, right? You follow the child in early childhood. They're not tested. They're not expected to pick up one or the other. Their brain is just so absorbent. They're absorbing it in those years, right? As they are just being in the environment and being with their teachers. And they will start to produce. And that's another thing in our language comprehension and language production is two different areas of the brain as well. So what right. you hear, they could be taking in both of the languages, but maybe in one part of their, you know, their home, it might be more English. So they might be producing more English than Spanish, but it doesn't mean that they're still learning how to understand Spanish, even if they're not fully speaking it or fully being immersed. But the method, again, is very, it's a high proponent of dual language learning and bilingualism. So
that's crazy. Wendy and I have two godchildren that are Spanish, and the father speaks Spanish. The mother speaks Spanish fluently, too. She's a counselor in St. Paul Public Schools. And the amazing thing that I didn't know is they didn't speak for a long time when they were babies because they were absorbing both the languages, and then once they spoke, they knew both of them.
It was in our Montessori method, we call that the explosion of language, right? It usually happens between 2 and 3 because it is an absorbent brain. They call it like a sponge. They're gathering all of that, and then once the explosion happens, like they don't stop talking. So, and then you want to encourage that at that point, right? Once they do start talking, as much encouragement and repetition as possible, because, you know, the brain in those first 6 years is so amazing in what it can do. And it's the neurodiversity. And then, you know, we're pruning down. And as adults, it takes us 7 years to get a second language. A baby who's getting both languages equally in their first 6 years of life will speak both. You know,
yeah, fluently. I was like, you talk to daddy in Spanish and mommy in English and back and forth. And at first it was like they weren't speaking, but that's why they were absorbing like a sponge.
Absolutely. And, you know, in a historical context and how native languages were taken from us in the boarding school era, right? They took our children from us to wipe mm-hmm. their tongues of the language, right? So In my way, I think that like our greatest efforts should be with our children. And when we try to revitalize our language in the same way they took it is the same way we need to give it back, right? We need to get our children back and start speaking our languages to them. Because that was a very successful era to the point that I'm 3 generations removed and I still don't know my language fluently, right? So we're kind of in a rush to keep our first language speakers around our babies so that we can have first language speakers again. And some tribes do this pretty well. The Cocha de Pueblo, they have a Montessori down there where they're 3 generations speaking first language speakers again. So there's a couple of tribes around the nation who have taken on the method. So not just us.
Hey, Brooke, stay with us. We got to pay the bills here and we're going to take a quick break. But wow, really excited. Let's jump more into this conversation where we're with Brooke LaFlo. Just all around groovy person and a doer. She's a doer. We'll be right back after this short break. Stay with us.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
Hey, Olgama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
This is David from The David Pakman Show, where we expose the hatriots, liars, and Trumpists. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Seward Co-op is now offering convenient self-serve and prepackaged hot options and salad bars at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Breakfast items available daily until 11 a.m. and brunch served all day every Sunday. Their weekly lunch and dinner menus highlight cuisines from around the world. They offer vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free options daily. 95% of the ingredients used are organic from small-scale, local community food producers whenever possible. More at seward.coop.
Is your remote workforce putting your company at risk? Cyber criminals are targeting your employees with COVID-19-inspired emails and attacking businesses like yours. Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rimark. Rimark has the tools and expertise to enable your employees to work securely from home. If you need help getting your staff to work remotely and securely, call 651-328-8900 or go to RimarkIT.com. That's 651-328-8900 or RimarkIT.com.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
2022 continues to be a hot real estate market, and any advantage you gain could net you thousands of dollars. If you do plan to move at some point, installing a system from All Energy Solar could increase your resale value and help you sell your home faster. Energy costs will not be going down anytime soon, so a property with a solar energy system could make it much more attractive to potential buyers. Buyers consider electric bills when buying a home, and installing solar panels is viewed as an upgrade. Each kilowatt of solar energy could increase the resale value of your home by thousands of dollars. And even when you sell your home, you'll likely recoup the cost of switching to solar thanks to your increased property value. So if you plan to sell your home, make your home as attractive as possible to buyers by switching to All Energy Solar. Get a free, no-obligation assessment from All Energy Solar by calling 800-620-3370 or visiting allenergysolar.com. That's allenergysolar.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 38, Thursday cloudy with a high near 45, and Friday cloudy with a high near 46. The Great Wall Restaurant in Edina provides an extensive Chinese menu with an emphasis on Sichuan and Peking cuisine. Some of the favorites include the sesame chicken, cream cheese wonton, and Sichuan duck with walnuts. Located just north of 50th and France on the Edina-Minneapolis border, dine in or order takeout at GreatWallEdina.com.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1, U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot. Well, it was great hearing from Leonard. This portion's brought to you by... the Native Roots Radio Presents in partnership with Little Moments Count. And I'm here with Brooke LaFleau, and I'm really excited to talk some more about her Montessori experience and just all the things she's doing. And it looks like Ogma's baby wants to talk. and she wants to go to a Montessori school too. Wow, that baby's getting big, Ogma. Hey, welcome back, Brooke. I just... kicked in my ADHD and started looking at Ogama's baby. But I want to talk a little bit more. I want to ask you a couple questions. And one of them I want to ask you is, from your time teaching at a Montessori center, what did you learn about how children talk about race and their culture? What have you learned about that?
Yeah, one of the ways that we practiced at the Montessori American Indian Child Care Center, talking about race, we would use the medicine wheel and, you know, the colors of the medicine wheel to describe different people in the world. You know, there's white people, there's black people, there's our Asian Eastern relatives that are the yellow, and then there's the red, there's us. So that was kind of the extent that we would just say that there's different people in the world. We look different, right? We are different colors. And that's just part of all being in the circle and all being part of the world. As we came, we were an intertribal school here in the city. So as we kind of get even further into that method of with our native children and even biracial children, right? Because in the cities, our native children look many ways. Our native children are half bilingual. They are half Spanish. They are half black. We just talk about our tribes, right? And if children do know what tribe they come from, they can say that. We tell them to ask their parents so that they can have conversations at home about where they come from and who they are and who their people are. So if they know their reservation, you know, we encourage them to say that, their specific tribe. If they only know their Anishinaabe and Dakota, that we encourage that. So we take the conversation about race and racism even deeper within our own little community, because we're intersectional now. You know, we have biracial children and bilingual in many ways. Even at our Montessori, we had bilingual children coming in knowing Spanish and English, and we were trying to give them Dakota, right? Like their third language.
Yeah.
Pretty cool too. So
don't forget Ho-Chunk. Ho-Chunk.
Yeah, we had some Ho-Chunks and we had some Dene's and Navajo children in the cities here too. So, yep.
We're all over. Hey, you know, with Reservation Dogs and all these great movies coming out, Prey, you know, that isn't the norm. So how does the media or history of stereotypical images of Native people affect your children? You know, how do you combat that?
Yeah, it can be, like you said, we're in a new era. We're in a cool era where it's cool to be Indian and be on TV and be proud of who you are. You said, there was a time when there was white people portraying Indians on TV because there was still no Indians in that field, right? There was no Native people in the media field. So accurate representation is important. And I wouldn't even say just in the media, but in your classrooms, right? It's in politics. In Minnesota, we've got, you know, a Native woman at the executive level, the highest level of being a legislator. So I would say to have that example, especially in the cities, when you're not surrounded by just your Native people like you would be on our reservations, it's more important, right? Because we're running the risk of assimilating, or we're running the risk of negative or poor stereotypes in the media, as opposed, like, so that's why, you know, those positive examples are important, but also not just on TV and in media, but in real life, you know, like in your community, in your someone you can talk to every day that's older than you, that looks maybe like you, maybe doesn't look like you, but can still speak to you about your identity and your culture in a good way. So
that's kind of how you combat it, because I know another way possibly too is you talk about these good things, but it's hard to show a 6-year-old Reservation Dogs because of the potty mouth that Bobby Wilson has and all the things that he wrote in those scripts, right?
Yep. Yep. And the intergenerational model too, you know, like we bring my little brother around these kids, and, you know, bring young people around, bring old people around, you know, they've got to see people of all ages doing good things. So.
Right. And, you know, I always, you mentioned Lieutenant Governor, whenever I see her or anybody, you know, Peggy Flanagan or Mary Kunish or any of our leaders, I say, Pinigigi, thank you, because it's a great example for our kids.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
And I know you do too, because even when you were young, which is not that long ago, it was still hard to see, you know, people that look like you doing these things.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need more of us too. You know, I think everybody in the community has a place, and there's a leader in every single one of us to step up and show, you know, the next generation that we're contributing to our communities and our families and our societies too, outside of our mm-hmm. native communities, right? We're doing a lot in our societies. The tribes are like one of the number one employers in the whole state of Minnesota, if you put them together. So
Same in Wisconsin. Same in Wisconsin. Yep. And, you know, hey, talk, you know, I loved baseball. I loved hockey when I was young, and football and all these sports. Talk about your basketball experience and also what you brought here to the Twin Cities, because that's a big deal. And I'm Facebook friends with you, so I see you take these young men all over the country, too, to play basketball. Talk about that a little bit for us.
Absolutely, yeah. And just in the early childhood sense, play is the work, right? Play is the way we build our brains. And so I encourage that throughout life, right, that we don't stop that aspect of play. And basketball is one of the ways I've been able to exercise myself, identity, and like me being a student athlete. I went to college. I walked onto a D3 team. I walked onto a D1 team. We went to the NCAA tournament my senior year. Went to school, came home, started working. And then it was two summers ago when my nephew, we lost my cousin Becky, his mom, asked me to take him to a tournament. And so that one tournament turned into two tournaments, turned into three tournaments, turned into a second season. We're going to be going into our third season next summer. You know, we play for his mom, which is my cousin, because I was like, if we're going to go do this, we're going to do this for a reason, and we're going to do this as a family, and this is going to bring us healing, because there was not a lot of healing in our family when we lost my cousin. She was ran over on our reservation on Easter in 2009. To this day, we don't know what happened to her. So us coming together as a family, my little brother's on the team, our Harding boys, you know, this is the first time I've seen a lot of Native basketball players just in the public schools, right? When I went to public schools, there was two of us, I think. So we combined our team here, our boys from the Turtle Mountain, our family back home, and we play for our missing and murdered relatives. And in particular, we play for Becky and our family. But we share that with our relatives. We share that with these boys, right? And we talk about their role in the movement of being their mother's protectors, their sister's protectors, their auntie's protectors. And we talk about that when we go out in the world, right? Like when we went to Vegas, I was like, buddy up, don't leave each other, don't leave me, you know, we take care of each other. And so we use basketball as a way to talk about those things, to bring healing within ourselves and our families, but to share also awareness with our other relatives who maybe don't have that experience in their family, or they've learned about it in a different way. So we use the hoop medicine and the sport to bring us healing, but we also use it as a method to kind of go out and raise awareness and just share that, hey, this is still happening to us, and we're trying to be active participants and solutions towards it and raising awareness, but also like just again that active healing for ourselves was an important part of what we call the hoop medicine, right? What does basketball do for so many of our kids is bring them physical healing and health and good things.
It was beautiful, too. I stopped in at the MMIW part of your weekend, and what really impressed me is, for one, there was one basketball team that sat right front and centered and listened politely, and that was impressive, very impressive. And that's what sport, and in a good way, can give our kids.
Absolutely. I have that picture. I'll send it to you. It's the most amazing picture from the day. Those were all Black boys. And they, you know, that was a part of what the boys wanted to do was culture share with their peers. Right. Because if only Indian people solved this problem, there would still be a problem. Right. Like we're not the only ones contributing to this problem. So we absolutely do need our allies in this work, and we do need our peers to understand our issues, and we need us to understand their issues so that we can, you know, come together and do things in a good way. And I think that the whole basketball expo really brought so much light to that, and just the, you know, the East Side community is so diverse, and that was a beautiful part of the day. And I agree. Yeah. I had that picture send it.
It was definitely, and kudos to the coaches, because, you know, when I was that age, that isn't how I acted. So it was awesome. Hey, we only got a couple minutes left. I want to ask you about this is something that somebody told me about. I had no idea you were making toys. What tell me about that.
That's kind of the word for it. That would be the child word for it. I would call them learning materials. So part of the Montessori method is that there's a physical material that teaches, has an intentional learning aspect behind it. So for infants, there's a series of mobiles that help develop the eyes, from color, developing the color to the tracking of movements. And so a lot of those Montessori materials have been developed, and part of my work and my master's and just working in the field is making them more culturally relevant. So we turned the first mobile of dancers into like a powwow mobile. So it's, you know, it's not just stick figures, it's powwow dancers. And then there's a Gobi that we turned into a medicine wheel mobile. So using, again, the method and the ideology of the method, but making it more culturally appropriate for our children. And we've been selling those and giving those away since 2018. So about 5 years now.
Wow, that's awesome. Brooke, we got less than a minute. Do you have anything else to end this with? I want to have you on again and again and again. You're awesome. And you're a doer. And I just got to say that about you. You are a doer. I see you all over the community. And that's a huge.
Yeah, I just want to say, Chimi Gwich, a huge, huge thank you for having me here today. If you'd like to learn more about the boys' basketball stuff, our the Nini Janus items, which are those learning materials, those toys, you can find us on NiniJanus1ofOnes.com. That's Nini Janus with the number one of ones.com. And yeah, give us a shout out. Support us as you can. We're a social enterprise for Indigenous children. So everything we do in a good way for our children. So
you sure do. Pinigigi Brooke, we'll be right back after this short break. Native Roots Radio on Civic Media Network.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
J&S Bean Factory is a native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
As we head towards colder weather, it's important to make sure you're up to date on vaccinations and protected from COVID-19. The Native American Community Clinic is now administering the updated Pfizer bivalent booster. The updated bivalent booster helps protect against the original COVID-19 strain and against newer Omicron variants. And it will help restore protection that has decreased since previous vaccinations. People aged 12 and older are now recommended to get an updated bivalent booster dose at least 2 months after their last COVID-19 shot. That means the bivalent booster may be given after a person's primary series or after their last booster shot, regardless of what brand you received before. Even if you've already had COVID-19, you should get vaccinated. Right now, at the Native American Community Clinic, you can get COVID-19 vaccines, including updated boosters, at the same visit as other vaccines. However, if you've received a recent monkeypox vaccine, you may need to wait 4 weeks before you can get a COVID-19 vaccine, and you should discuss this with your provider. Schedule your vaccination appointment with the Native American Community Clinic by calling 612-872-8086.
Hi, this is Representative Charisse Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Say, this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
Howl. I had to get that up real quick. Hey, that was Ogama, you're a doer, and I feel like Brooke's a doer. And
Brooke is a doer. Really... Brooke's one of my idols. She does so much. It's amazing all the work that she does and what she's accomplished already so far. And just her work with children especially inspires me too as a mom. I don't know if you can hear, I got my little one with the remix coming in back here. She's got a hand drum and a tiny rattle in her hand. I wish I could
want the
show
music.
You guys.
We want the music. That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. You know, my friend, you know, our godchildren, Wendy and I's godchildren, that really blew my mind when they didn't speak for a long time because their brain was getting all hooked up in different ways to be able to speak two languages at once.
Right. And I've heard that about children who are bilingual and children who are raised in homes where there's more than one language spoken. My oldest talked really early, and so did I, but I wonder if we wouldn't have both talked later, you know, had we been exposed to another language early on in our lives, you know?
Right.
I always wonder those kinds of things. And I'm not fluent in any other language. Like Brooke was saying, many of us aren't. And we need more immersion programs like or bilingual programs like what Brooke was describing at the Montessori School to help bring our languages back.
Well, if you've been listening to the show the last 6 years, you can kind of tell that I'm not fluent at any language. exactly.
English is hard, though. I mean, English is hard. Like, as an English speaker, and you know, kind of realizing, you know, there, and there, and all these other weird kind of language atrocities that English has. Like, I really feel for people who are learning English as a second language, because I can't imagine trying to explain some of the subtleties and the other things that happen in our language.
Well, I just want to say, too, we're really excited to partner with littlemoments.com and host these conversations every couple weeks and talk about, you know, how they view the role of early childhood development in creating bright futures and strong communities. I mean, that's what we're all about, and they're doing it. They're doers, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, their message is so important that 80% of all that brain growth that you have in your whole life happens in the first 1,000 days that you're alive. So you can really help your children to learn in those first few days by just using little bitty moments, you know, when you're shopping, when you're changing a diaper, by reading a book each night. There's a really you know, talking to your children is really important, but there's really kind of endless ways that you can help teach your child. And if you need ideas, you can go to littlemomentscount.org. And one of the awesome things that they have on their website is a text program that I actually signed up for, even though I kind of consider myself a veteran mother. You know, I've got a 9-year-old and now a new baby. But in the last almost 10 years, they've learned a lot more about children and, you know, brain development. Yeah. And this text program that they have at Little Moments Count sends you those ideas to remind you, hey, here's what's good to do for your baby at this age. And they go all the way up to age 5. They'll send you 2 texts a week. And it's been really great.
Hey, have you and I have been talking about this? I'm not sure. But there's a, you know, we have sponsors and, oh, there's the baby right there talking to us about coming on. And there's one that may be coming on very soon that talks about fetal alcoholism in the children and how different it is now, Ogama, that, you know, I think when you used to hear that term, you'd feel really bad for the child. But now there's ways to really, it's a developmental thing, and there's ways to combat that, I guess, is a way to put it.
Right. And we know a lot more now, too, about fetal alcohol syndrome and how, you know, it's kind of on a spectrum like many other things that we know about. I apologize for the background sounds. The baby is grabbing my microphone for anybody that's listening on our podcast platforms or on the radio. But, you know, they used to only be able to tell when a baby had fetal alcohol syndrome because of the, you know, physical abnormalities or the delays. But now they're finding out just how little alcohol it takes and that fetal alcohol syndrome, you know, affects social and emotional behaviors, even when there's no physical things that are affecting the child. So we've learned a lot more about fetal alcohol syndrome in that way. And now we've learned a lot more about how to help children who you know, experience that in utero. And I think that's going to be really healing.
It's amazing. I don't know how many people are watching this on Facebook Live or YouTube, but Ogama, I'm kind of watching what you go through 24/7. You have an older daughter. You have a husband you have to take care of, and Wendy knows all about that. And you have a little baby there that wants to grab the microphone and be on the radio show. And now she's kissing you. So it's correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't your baby only like 7 months old?
She is only seven months old.
She's acting like an older baby.
She is definitely ahead on a few things, or, you know, ahead. I don't know. I don't really subscribe to those scales. I only kind of keep an eye out on them just in case there's something that, you know, my child maybe needs a little help with. And actually, she's had to be in physical therapy because she needed a little help with stuff. Her body kind of developed. Her muscles weren't quite even on one side. So she was like slouching to the side and her head was turned to the side. So we've been doing physical therapy since she was about 3 months old, and she's just coming into graduating out of it now at about 7 months old. But, you know, I try not to, like Brooke was saying, I try not to describe to all those standards and things that people try to impose on children. Children do things in their own time and with the right support. So that's what I'm trying to do.
You know, too, that's really cool to hear, Ogma, too. And I think as an educator, I was a high school educator for almost 30 years. And one of the things I know that I could bring to education was it's not a race. And, you know, things happen for a reason in your lifetime, or maybe you're not as confident when you're younger. But who's to say you can't go back to school once you kind of feel like who you are? And we're all lifetime learners, and I know you're back in school and really excited about that.
Much. And I just read something on this that was really funny the other day, that like the whole idea that we have in education right now about testing, and like you have like a one and done kind of mentality. Like if you go into a trade and you're learning how to weld and you do it wrong, and you know, you end up with air pockets in your weld, and it's not a tight weld, and they review it and they find that it's not where it needs to be, they're not going to give you a failing grade and tell you, oh, well, too bad, that's it. They're going to have you take it out and redo it a couple of times until you figure out how it's done. And when we have all of these systems of testing and those kinds of things that are happening in schools, we're teaching children basically that if I can't get it right the first time, then it's not worth me trying anymore. It's not about learning. It's about, you know, answering to those test scores. So I really appreciate methods and schools like Montessori method and kind of those cultural or non-traditional schools that, you know, really take the focus off of those testing and focus on children and human beings in general. Colleges have that kind of, some colleges are better at that than others, you know, Robert?
Yeah, definitely. And one thing I wanted to say too, before we end the show, Pini Gigi to Brooke LaFlo and of course Ogama and her little baby there. Is why I like Reservation Dogs. Remember when they were when he was roofing his first day, and he says, "Well, what do I do?" And he says, "Just watch us," and you know, and keep moving. But that's life, and it's a great analogy. Hey, I would like to end with these thoughts. If you're listening to the show, you are part of the resistance. From Chief Plentycoops, the ground on which we stand on is sacred ground. It is the blood of our ancestors. We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office like Roger Williams. We're still here. We are the seventh generation. Free Leonard Peltier now.